The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to We the People. You are joining Aaron, Bill, and Bob.
Hi, fellas.
Hi, Aaron.
No, not the Waltons. It's We the People.
Oh, sorry.
Oh my gosh, another day with a little scurrying. You know, it never fails. There's always some new twist when we get started here. So, we have a fun announcement, actually. The format of our show will be just being altered slightly. We're still 2 hours, and we still air live Sundays from noon to 2 out here at KCNR 1460 AM, but we will also be on the air at WNJC 1360 in the Philadelphia and Jersey markets.
Jersey Shore.
We're going to the Jersey Shore.
Yeah,
I've never seen the show. I can't even joke about it. Sorry, people in Jersey Shore. Or maybe they don't want us to watch it, actually. It's probably the case. That'll be Tuesdays from 1 to 2 Eastern Standard Time. And we'll be coordinating with the guys at Conservative Commandos, who are bringing a bunch of different shows together to handle the airtime there in the afternoons in that market. So pretty fun. So we'll be talking to Lauren Price today from the Veteran Warriors. She has a ton of information for us. We're going to have a really good overview of everything we're going to talk about the first hour, and then we're going to talk to her some more the second hour. You can always catch our archives at wethepeopleradio.us and live show streaming on Sundays. And then after that, we've got an archive up by about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon or so. And happy to chat with you on the chat room. If it's Sunday, if it's not, we're sorry. We won't be on the chat room, but we're glad to meet all our folks on the East Coast.
Yeah, well said.
There.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think I got everything. Oh, it was a long list.
I couldn't have done it without you.
Yeah, since you're using my laptop because you didn't bring a cord.
A little problem there.
Yeah, we always have something. There's always something. The best laid plans, you know. So, Lauren, are you in there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
You did you have a little swim?
No.
Oh, so much for that idea.
Yeah.
So I have up on my handy dandy smartphone here your website, veteranwarriors1.com, and I really like so many veteran organizations kind of skip over all the things with the VA, and that's really what you guys focus on. It says here, our goal is to be the catalyst which forces the necessary changes to the manner in which the Department of Veterans Affairs does business with the veteran. Imagine that. So, not any surprise that we found each other.
No.
Probably no shortage of material either, huh?
Sadly, no.
Yeah, unfortunately. So we're going to do our best to kind of go through this in an overview. And for those people that are thinking, another frustrating episode of the VA is broken, actually, this is not one of those, because Lauren's group, Veteran Warriors, has crafted a solution, if you will, an alternative plan for them. Doesn't fire any employees, which I know makes some of us sad, but doesn't fire anybody, doesn't change the budget, doesn't do anything other than make it more efficient. And we're going to go through that this morning, too, or this afternoon. I have morning on the brain. All right. So Lauren, why'd you start Veteran Warriors? I know you're a Navy veteran.
Yeah, after and thanks, first of all, for having us on the show.
Of course.
My organization as a whole and me personally, Aaron, I want to thank you. After I got home from a deployment to Iraq, I had my own VA claim issues. Spent 18 months on active duty after I got home going through all of that. And got to see firsthand what tens of thousands, millions of my brothers and sisters have gone through, in some cases 30 years or so, of dealing with the VA, both the medical side and the claim side. And my husband also a veteran. All three of my sons are veterans. And as each of us was returning home, we were seeing these just abominations of anything remotely resembling law or policy. And that combined with the blatant and overt disrespect that veterans are treated with when you go to a VA facility, whether it's a medical facility or a regional office, it was shocking to us, to say the least. But the big thing we were concerned about was, why isn't anyone doing anything about this? And we decided we were going to, you know, the old thing is, you know, I keep expecting someone else to do something. Well, we decided we were those people. We were the ones that were going to do something about the way the VA actually does business with its one and only customer, the American veteran.
I think it's important because there aren't a lot of people digging into this part of it. It's confusing. It's cumbersome. And a lot of people don't have to deal with it.
No, people are, it's heart-wrenching is the only real word I can say anymore. We currently have over 550 open cases, and these are, we do not do VSO type work, veteran service officer type work. We don't file a claim for a veteran. We don't sit them down and show them all the things that they could be entitled to. We only get involved when a veteran has an extremely egregious issue with the Department of Veterans Affairs, and regardless of which sector of the VA that their issue is. We also do hands-on, boots-on-ground issues with helping veterans, whether it's homeless veterans, veterans in transient positions, veterans needing help finding jobs, those things. So our work is at a 100,000-foot level with Congress on a daily basis. But it is also very much day-to-day working with veterans from across the nation and literally across the globe. We have veterans not just in every single state that we're helping, but also in five separate countries outside of the U.S. that we're helping with benefits or services.
Lauren, I noticed on your website, by the way, that's a really nice website, easy to navigate, lots of information on there. There was a video on there of a veteran that you were able to get a wheelchair for, or a power chair. What's the backstory on that? The VA wouldn't supply it?
4 years. He'd been approved for 4 years. He is now a state coordinator for us in California, Northern California. Mr. Cotton had waited 4 years for a wheelchair, a power chair. The VA's answer was to hand him a mechanical wheelchair. His wife, and she's pictured in the video in a couple places, but his wife is a tiny, tiny little thing, and Mr. Cotton is enormous. He's a big, big man. He's like 6'5".
Yeah, he was a big guy.
And they said, you know, she can push him around in this thing. And after 4 years of waiting, Bruce introduced himself after an interview I'd done with another network, and he didn't even ask for anything. He just wanted to thank us for stepping up and standing up for him and especially other Vietnam vets. And he told me what was going on with his situation. And he said, you know, I'm hoping that what you're doing will change this so that we won't have to do this anymore. And in 7 days, through all of our supporters, as well as connecting up with other veteran supporters across the nation, we were able to secure a power chair, the lift that goes on the vehicle, and transport all of those, as well as $700 in cash to Mr. Cotton inside of 7 days. And
wow,
And the thing is that the ironic part about this is that the VA could actually provide that for him. They're authorized. He was approved for it. It just nobody was doing their job. Yeah. And that was only the first time of many since then that we have done this, you know, pick up the slack where the VA is dropping the ball.
Did he ever get it? Did he ever get a chair from VA?
He actually did. And now that chair that we got for him, which was donated by a non-veteran family, that chair is now belongs to his local, I believe it's the American Legion post, and it is on permanent loan. They own it, and they loan it out to veterans who are waiting for their power chairs.
Oh, that's great.
And that's, we've actually taken that model that Bruce came up with, that idea, and we now do that with three other power chairs in different sectors of the country.
That's fabulous. You know, the one thing that we're going to talk about, we need to take a quick break, and when we come back, you had given me a little synopsis of the roots of the VA and how that has sort of led to it collapsing on itself, and I thought that was very... That was a very, very interesting thing that most people don't know. So when we come back, we're going to hear more from Lauren about the beginning of the VA and how we got here. It's super important.
Great.
Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We will be back with you in 2 minutes. Thanks very much.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but
definitely going to fight the powers to be, especially when it comes to government agencies. You're joining We the People. Follow us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Lauren Price from Veteran Warriors. All right, Lauren, give us the backstory on VA.
Okay. What the VA loves to talk about is, for 150 years they've been in business and taking care of veterans. That is actually not true, and I'd be happy to sit down with the secretary and educate him. The VA has been in business since immediately after the Civil War. It was set up then sort of like the USO in an effort to care for the war wounded, because many families had been displaced during the Civil War, and the veterans themselves couldn't actually even find their families. So the War Department itself set this organization up solely to help them get medical care and help them kind of get back on their feet again. We actually ran across, this is about a year ago, we ran across the very first claim for benefits by a Civil War veteran who walked into Congress. At that time, it was, you signed in on a table, and filed his grievance and appeal during a congressional hearing, because he'd waited 12 months since he got out of the Civil War and had not received his stipend from the VA. It, to this day, is still functioning without a foundation. What people fail to see on a regular basis, the Internal Revenue was set up as a federal agency. The Department of Homeland Security was even set up as a federal agency. The VA was not. It was never intended to manage 22 million veterans. It was never intended to manage 9 million veterans war wounded. It was never intended to be a contracting firm, and it was definitely never intended to have the budget that it has now. What happened along the way is, because it did not have a solid foundation, it was set up under the executive branch. The secretary and his underlings all answer directly to the president. They do not answer to Congress. They get all of their marching orders, or lack thereof, from the president. And it has left the agency without a strong foundation in law or policy as set up by Congress. And now we're trying to triage all of the problems that are generated from not having a real foundation, from not having a standardized protocol across the nation on how things are dealt with. And this secretary is actually trying to fix that, but you can't turn an aircraft carrier in a parking lot. And he has less than 2 years left in his seat, and it's not going to happen under the way that they're trying to do it, leaving it as this massive federal agency with no foundation.
And it gets bigger by the day.
Unfortunately, yes, and that's not because of the war wounded. That is because of the amount of people it brings on board as employees.
Yeah, that kind of fascinates me as well. They seem to get a bigger and bigger budget and hire more and more people, but they seem to help fewer and fewer veterans as more and more veterans are added onto the rolls.
What people failed, what Congress fails to see, and the VA is very, very good at sidestepping, is that the veteran population of this nation is diminishing drastically. Since 2009, we've lost over 2 million veterans. And that's only through the 13 census. And that is, in that four-year period, these veterans were World War II, Korean War, Vietnam, and unfortunately, more current hostilities, veterans who have they've passed away, so they're no longer in the system. That doesn't include those of us who've chosen not to operate within the system. And the demographics of the people that are in the system right now, we have less than 200 World War II veterans. We have only a few thousand Korean War veterans left. And there are tens of thousands of Vietnam veterans, but they are so sick that they are dying at a much faster rate than their predecessors. By the year 2020, all of them will be gone, and we will have solely Cold War post 9/11 vets, from the Cold War through post 9/11 vets, and the veteran population will be cut almost in half. Yet the VA wants to build mammoth, Denver as an example, or Orlando, these mammoth facilities, and wants more money every year. And every time something's broken, they say we need more money to fix it, rather than we need to examine our problem.
Same, too. We were talking about the way that the budget is utilized and the size of the budget. I was blown away at the size when you were comparing it to the Department of Defense.
Yeah, actually, I'm digging this out right now while we're speaking. The VA, since the current administration came into power six and a half years ago, has not had a... They've not been refused a budget request at all, and every single year has been an increase. Each year they increase on an average of about 20% over the previous year. And that has been consistent since 2009. And since then, they've gotten, with nary a word, even a discussion on the floor about how they're spending that money. And this year, the 15th budget that came under discussion and is being passed around right now for discussion, is going to push them almost to the Department of Defense's level, which the Department of Defense is the most expensive federal agency in the government. The VA is the second, and they are rapidly approaching the DOD. Between the DOD's drawdown out of war and the VA's claims of necessity for increases, they're getting ready to meet. And we have yet to see not one single time when their books have been audited to confirm where they're spending their money.
Why is that? What's your guess? You follow the Inspector General reports. You really look at the inside workings of this organization. Why is it that they seem to constantly escape scrutiny?
There's two reasons. One is the way that the contracts are set up for employees. There's the American Federation for Government Employees is the union that represents the rank and file employees of the VA. Off the top of my head, I'm sorry, I don't remember the date. The current contract that's in place, while it was being negotiated, the biggest issue that came up was about how they reward their employees. And that, I don't mean pay them, I mean reward them over and above their paychecks. And under the VBA side, the Veterans Benefit Administration side, there was intense discussion about specific
Uh-oh. Something has happened. The VA threw a net over Lauren.
NSA.
She's in the cone of silence.
Oh, there you are.
Oh, you're back.
Yeah, I'm here.
we thought you brought down the cone of silence, but we need you to leave that up.
NSA. Sorry.
So they were negotiating their contract, and they didn't want any oversight?
Well, what they had at the time were the performance awards, they call them, bonuses, were in place when claims were completed. What they changed it to is now under, it's from a collection industry. In the national collection industry standard is it's keystroking. For each thing you do on a file, you get a point or a number of points. And that is now how the claim side is handled. And this same mentality went into the VHA. If you're the head of radiology and I tell you your budget is $10,000 a year, and if a x-ray costs $1,000, and your only way you're going to get your bonus is if you come in under budget. The motivation is immediately in front of you now to only allow 9 x-rays a year. And that is the contract that's in place right now, and it is the biggest issue we're pushing with legislators is to have open and very public discussion about the way that new contract that is up for renewal right now, about how it's structured to remove the financial motivation from care and processing of veterans' issues.
So the bureaucrats are basically in charge of who gets and how many x-rays a year.
Well, because they're being incentivized.
Any particular service that they may require, if their bonus is in jeopardy, they may not give it to you.
Well, we should also throw in there that there are a lot of people who would speak out on an issue like this. And, you know, people, I can hear people thinking it. Well, where are the whistleblowers? You know, why don't people speak up? Well, being a whistleblower doesn't work out so well.
No, it's not good for your employment or career path.
Your career path takes an immediate downward trajectory.
Yep, you wind up either fired or harassed and pushed into early retirement. A lot of the people who speak out, I know a lot of the people who have spoken out on the Oakland situation, all of them as a matter of fact, are all veterans. So these are folks who are, in many cases, have serious medical issues. And it's amazing. I know one who didn't want to process the PTSD claims because that was a real big factor for them. And so they said, hey, I'll do all the other ones. So as soon as that person started making waves about the way the process was done, boom, an onslaught of nothing but PTSD claims. So obviously that was like, see the handwriting on the wall. You're now being ostracized by your fellow employees. You're getting work that makes you a little bit over the edge.
Because if you give somebody the benefits they're entitled to, it's going to affect the whole crew's bonus opportunity. So you're the rotten egg in the crowd. Now they're going to
squealed. You're a squealer.
Yep. Now we're going to put you down in the basement.
We have currently on our roster, we have a membership. It's very loose membership. You can be a member of our organization. We have state coordinators, which is very precise. We also have whistleblowers. In addition to the 6 people that were involved with Oakland VA regional office and their absolute corrupt illegal actions to deny over 13,000 veterans of their rightful earned benefits, we have, in addition to those 6, we have another 8 across the nation who have come forward and are working through our office either with the Office of Special Counsel or are working as insider whistleblowers who are providing information directly to us and through us to the office. It's the House Committee on Veterans Affairs Office of Oversight and Investigation, because when they hand us information, we don't go public with it. I don't hold a press conference. I don't send out press releases. I send it to the ONI and ask them for their input. I ask them for whether or not this can be made public, because we want these people brought to justice we want to see these whistleblowers to be able to maintain their employment that they've worked so hard for. And every single one of those 14 are all veterans. And we've seen it already since Phoenix exploded, the story about Phoenix in general, the turn went from insiders were afraid. They were afraid of getting fired. They were afraid of sanctions. They were afraid of media attention. And then slowly it turned to now it's very overt. We have people that are getting on social media and hourly, very publicly stating who they are, who they work for, which regional office they're attached to, what their position is, and just vilifying veterans. And they'll say anything, things that you wouldn't even think of normally saying. But these people, because now they know they're essentially, we call it bulletproof. They know they're not going to get fired. They know that it's taking, even acts of Congress are not making these people go away. So our whistleblowers are even more afraid to come forward now. And we work very, very hard at helping them gain their legal protection first and foremost, and then reach out to media outlets that are reliable and responsible, and will make sure that accurate information gets disseminated publicly when it's able to be done.
Have the whistleblowers that you're working with, have they experienced any mistreatment?
Let's do repercussions when we come back. We have an emergency bulletin coming in, which is why you hear all that weird typing in the background. You are listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Lauren Price from Veteran Warriors. We'll be back in just a couple of seconds. Thank our advertisers. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Tell me, because it hurts. It's the whistleblower's lament.
Oh my God.
Go ahead and tell. It won't hurt. Not even a little.
Yikes. Yeah, okay.
Oh, you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Lauren Price from Veteran Warriors talking about the VA. Da-da-da-da. So,
four-letter word in the South.
Yeah, no kidding. That's why I had to take a two-letter word and make it a four-letter word. Okay, so the Inspector General does the oversight, but the Inspector General works for the VA. So when they come out with their reports, they always kind of neck down to, they need more training and more oversight.
Yeah, it's the whitewash effect.
So who's going to bust these guys?
Well, nobody. Unless there's a full overhaul, and that's going to include some legislation, which would take the oversight, which is the Office of Inspector General, and remove them from the VA. Because right now, the VA, the secretary, answers to the president as a cabinet position under the executive office. The OIG, headed by Mr. Griffin, answers to the secretary. Regardless of how many times Mr. Griffin comes out publicly and says that they don't communicate with the leadership at the VA, or that the leadership doesn't have any input, they've already proven that to be untruthful. After the Phoenix report came out and they got caught through emails that the White House and the leadership at the VA was actively telling the OIG what they did and didn't want in the report. It is the only way to have truly unbiased investigations are to remove the pressure coming from VA leadership. The only place we've seen truly unbiased investigations, for lack of a better term, are from the GAO, which is the Government Accountability Office. They actually only answer to Congress, and they'll air every bit of dirty laundry. They just came out with a report in the last couple of days. It's actually up on our Facebook page that the VA spent in the last 2 years nearly $40 billion, that's the B, $40 billion in making VA facilities look nice, not bring them into state-of-the-art 21st century technology, not shore them up from catastrophic structural failures, none of those things, just to make them look pretty. And that's artwork and new desks and new carpeting and new paint and things like this. Every single veteran I've ever spoken to in my entire life would rather have an older-looking facility and not care about the artwork on the wall in the bathroom and have their claims processed properly the first time, get doctors that actually they can see within a six-month time frame, and get their prescriptions right every time, than what kind of artwork's on the bathroom wall. And we can't seem to get that point across. And unfortunately, now it looks like we have a third committee that's going to sit and put together a list of things that are wrong with the VA. And unfortunately, that'll take about 22 months, I'm sure.
Well, I think, you know, getting back to the Inspector General, doesn't each department, whether it be veterans or...
Yep, each one has its own Inspector General.
They all inspect themselves.
Kind of.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, that's
I think some
kind
operate,
of a problem.
But I think some operate more independently than others. We knew somebody that worked for one of the Inspectors General and said, you know what, that particular person was hated by the agency that they oversaw and went after them.
Because they actually did their job.
Yeah, went after them vigorously for any type of issues. But we just see over and over and over that it ends up with, well, in the case of Oakland, 13,184 claims came in that were never processed, and some might have accidentally been processed because people filed again or something.
Well,
but the Inspector General finds that and then doesn't.
Well, what about all the wasteful spending? I mean, they spent money on things and they didn't get busted for any of that. I mean, it's nuts.
Busted seems not to be one of the choices.
We've overturned.
Yeah, busted's not one of the choices.
When we talk about a full overhaul, we mean every sector, because we've looked at contracting, we've looked at human resources. The ability to pay a bonus is in the contracts, but that we have a saying: just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Right.
It's very simple.
It's
the
not
contracting
automatic.
In Denver, the contractor themselves was under investigation until they filed suit against the VA because the VA hadn't paid them in over a year. And that investigation ceased because the contractor walked off the job.
Well, just because they didn't do their job doesn't mean they don't get paid. Come on, that's ridiculous.
Don't be a hater.
Don't be a hater.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, right.
We equate this to, if you look at police departments, on both, you know, your local police department, your local sheriff's department, all the way up to state police and everything, they have internal affairs who, by television and movies, we all know they're named the rat squad because nobody wants to talk to them. They're the most hated individuals because they ferret out the wrongdoing. That is their job. It's amazing that the OIG's office is the only The VA OIG's office is the only agency where I have actually sat and read 10 years worth of reports and have yet to find a single incident where they have actually named by name criminal wrongdoing by an individual who works for that agency. We actually put together a team and had them go back 10 years and review every single OIG investigation that came out, whether VHA or VBA, and not one of them. They come out and, as Aaron so eloquently stated, you know, they need more training, they need more oversight. You can't train a conscience into someone.
Yeah.
It's impossible. You can't train compassion. You can't train humanity into anyone. And when their sole goal is to get a bonus, that is going to be the driving factor rather than doing their job correctly.
Well, and it's interesting because I know one of the congressional offices out here had requested of DOD to line out for them what bonuses they were getting at the VA, and they wrote back that there were none, which is kind of nutty.
But that's okay to lie, because I mean,
that is an outright lie.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter what level of government.
As long as you all swear to it, then
yeah,
it's all good.
As long as you keep saying the same lie, then eventually they'll give up asking, and it'll be the truth.
You know, the other thing, too, is people think that Congress, well, why aren't those Congress people firing them? And so for the folks that were like me, I don't know, goofing off in government back in eighth grade, the legislative branch and the executive branch, I think we all know those are separate, but we have to remember that on the one hand, Congress makes the laws. They can't enforce them. I mean, they could, but that's really messy, and you wouldn't want that. You'd have even bigger problems. So we need to take a really quick break. When we come back, we have Rusty on the phone with us, who would like to put in a little tidbit here. You're listening to We the People Radio. Got Lauren Price on here from the Veteran Warriors. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Forever, I will wait for you. For a thousand summers,
it's the VA theme song.
I will wait for you till you're back beside me.
Brutal. That's the song that describes what a lot of our veterans are doing when it comes to the VA. Not good and not right. Oh, sounds like we have somebody underwater on our phone line here. You're joining We the People Radio. Pick us up online at wethepeopleradio.us. Rusty, are you in there? Hmm. Or not. Lauren, how are you doing in there?
I'm still here.
Oh, you're still there. Oh.
And we lost Rusty.
Something was funky with her connection. So while she's calling us back, would you give us a little overview on what's going on with you guys have a revamp sort of in place, a plan that you're hoping that Congress will pick up and the VA will implement? What does that look like?
Well, just so you're aware, we actually did reach out to Undersecretary Hickey and asked for a meeting while we were in D.C. and to discuss this. And she bowed out claiming she had travel. We believe she went to California. Because magically she was back in time for a budget hearing.
Magically.
Our model, we have several, and each of our models addresses a sector of the VA. And quickly I'll do the claims model because it's the one that most people understand, even if they don't have a direct affiliation with the VA. In our world, the veteran is number one. The veteran is the only sole purpose for their existence, and the veteran will have a caseworker who handles their claim from cradle to grave, with the exception of oversight by their management team going upward, depending on the level of errors that are found in the processing of the claim. The biggest thing that the VA does not do is no one quality checks the claims when the examiner is finished with it. The examiner themselves, who are hired, mind you, with the same credentials are required for that job as as are required for a receptionist position at the VA. They have the total control and authority over that claim. No one goes back to check to make sure that it's correct. And when a person appeals it, regardless of if it's only one thing out of 50, the entire claim ends up back in the appeal process. All of these are actually in direct contradiction to the law. And all we want to do is restructure it so that the law itself is actually complied with and restructure how the process goes through. Under our model, when our data team looked at all the numbers, the existing backlog, which right now is right around 1 million claims, if you add all the things that the VA actually doesn't discuss, that includes appeals, would be gone in 6 months, would be out the door, and 100% accurate, give or take 3% for literal human error. And we offered this and offered to discuss it and walk through it with the VA leadership, and to date we've gotten no response.
And this doesn't...
We have similar ones for the VHA and the HR and contracting, and we're getting crickets.
So if they're crickets. Looking to make their system better, and this doesn't get rid of employees, this doesn't change their budget, you know, if you're going to go in and get rid of the union or something, okay, big fight coming, but you're not looking to do any of that. You're looking to just streamline them with what they have in place now.
Right. That is the biggest concern is every single person we've spoken to said, well, you know, you don't want to mess with, you don't want to tangle with the union. And no, we don't. And we have no objection to an existing contract in place, which ties every taxpayer in this country to keeping someone on the payroll, even if they're a derelict. We don't want to alter that at this point. We'll allow the contract negotiations to continue and address that through that process. The difference is that the people that are in position to make decisions on people's claims are not trained. They're not competent. They're not coming from medical transcription, medical insurance claims, workers' comp insurance claims. They're not coming from claims industry at all, and they're not tested. They have no experience doing this. In most cases, if I say to them, this soldier had a bilateral APL suspensionplasty and is claiming complete loss of use of both hands, they have no idea what we're talking about. And that is the problem.
That could explain some of the problem.
And if you folks out there that are interested in actually reading this plan, if you go to Lauren's website, veteranwarriors1.com, you can download, there's a PDF file there where you can download and read the entire plan. It's pretty simple. I personally don't see where they should have a problem with it, but obviously it's changed, so they're going to fight it.
Yeah, you don't want any forced efficiency because that's a huge problem too.
Well, yeah, that's that's our concern is they've been told, they being the VA, have been told by Congress, both the House and the Senate, by veterans advocacy organizations like my own, by VSOs, these big, huge veteran service organizations like the IAVA and the DAV and such, never mind media reports, and it's overwhelming if you try to actually find anything positive other than their own PR department. And yet, it comes down to something as basic. Chairman Miller screams at the top of his lungs about firing people who are caught doing something wrong.
And that just doesn't really seem like
not one has been fired.
Yeah,
and nobody's been ever fired. That's what grabs me.
Well, the people who've been fired have been fired because they tried to make the system better. And it's funny because they call them disgruntled employees. The disgruntled employees are the ones who work overtime and desperately try to make the system work better.
Well,
it's a little bit odd.
The saying is, go with the flow or you got to go.
Yeah. Well,
that's about it,
I can tell you. Every whistleblower we've ever talked to, the first thing that happens to them is, and they'll try to, because the people we talk to are veterans. They've led their lives through the chain of command. Mm-hmm. So they'll go through their chain of command internally, and then they come back and they can't believe the level of deceit, the level of the backstabbing and the deception that goes upward from this leadership chain of command. And all of a sudden they're blindsided with, you know, I filed this complaint, and, you know, excluding Oakland, there was actually recently a woman who she was asked to do a second check on another employee's investigation because they didn't like the results of that investigation. So they had this woman come in and do another investigation. And she found not only the same exact results, that this person did no wrongdoing, shouldn't be fired, but they told her adamantly to change her report. And when she didn't, she was fired.
Ah, super. Well, they'll always get the truth that way. Yeah, that creates a little bit of a problem, and I'm assuming your model doesn't allow for any of that.
No, because the biggest thing we're going to do is, under our model, right now there are shop stewards and union presidents in different chapters and all this around the nation. We're going to sit and work with them and tell them, it's very simple. We want to keep every single employee because we need them. The reality is right now we really need every employee. There's 330,000 plus employees in the VA system. We need everybody, whether it's a janitor or all the way up to the secretary. We need every single one on deck to make this happen. However, anyone caught under our model, anyone caught violating policy will be subject to immediate sanction in accordance with the policy and the union contract. Because in the union contract it says, if a person is written up and caught after an investigation and pointed out that they say, this person, John Doe, did this in violation of policy or law, that person is immediately written up. There's a process. Or fired or what have you. Well, we're going to get the union to agree to abide by the contract. They're not going to say no. They can't say no. They can't say, no, we're not going to abide by our own contract.
Right. They've already agreed to it.
Exactly. So when we start enforcing the contract, the biggest piece of our model for the entire VA is overwatch. Is after the legislation, after the big hoopla and the president signs it and everybody's happy, invariably the VA is handed the legislation and then they jam it all up and they twist it around to make it work for themselves.
We're gonna talk about that a little bit more. For those of you that are joining us in Philadelphia, thanks for coming on board. We're glad we have new friends on the other side of the country. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Hour 2 of We the People is next on KCNR Shasta Redding.
Oh, okay. I guess
you jumped the gun.
Got to push the button. Didn't push the button yet.
You were always got to push the button.
Welcome back to
We
the People Radio.
You push my buttons all the time.
I know. Yeah. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Holy cow. So that first hour was going into a new market for us in Philadelphia. So we were trying to do it the way they wanted it, and we were nervous. So now we can screw around. Yay!
Which is what they wanted, I think. So
we'll learn how to screw around and do it
disappointed.
Properly.
They're going to end up taking the second hour.
We'll take the second
we'll
one.
We'll learn how to screw around and do it properly sometime in the future. Okay, so we lost Rusty. She called us. So if you're still out there, Rusty calls back. There was just something funky going on with your signal. We have Lauren Price on with us from Veteran Warriors. This is a really important topic for our country, actually. And so everybody's got a veteran either in their immediate family, in their extended family. Somehow somebody's connected to a veteran situation. And at the end of the day, we all know that the VA, when it comes to processing claims, is doing a lousy job. A lot of it is the way they're structured. A lot of it is that we're incentivizing the wrong thing with bonuses, as we learned in the first hour. The archive can be found at wethepeopleradio.us, and I'll have that up in about an hour and 15 minutes or so.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too, what you said about how the VA was actually originally set up. And, you know, that...
It was never designed to be a monumental government agency.
And here we are throwing more and more and more money at it, and it's not getting any better.
No, but Lauren and I talked about this earlier. If you cut the money to the VA, then you hate veterans.
Yeah.
You know? So it's political suicide for anyone in Congress to do that, and the VA knows it. And I think that's how they get away with it.
Well, the Veterans Choice Program is a perfect example of that, of their actions and their response to, you've done something wrong. They were caught out literally with their pants down, and they were leadership across the nation at veterans health facilities were, and I actually was a victim of that, of the secret wait list. And it's what every veteran knew existed, because we get a postcard in the mail telling us we have an appointment that we didn't make.
Yeah.
But yet you show up for this appointment and, oh, it's been canceled. You must have canceled. Yeah, and they have in the system, you've canceled the appointment. And they find out, no, we didn't cancel the appointment. Veteran swears up and down they didn't cancel the appointment or they didn't do a no-show. Yet the Veterans Choice Program, in theory, created to allow veterans to go out to their civilian community, in turn gave the VHA $17 billion to blow. They hired two subcontractors. They split the country in half. TriWest handles the whole western half of the country. They draw a straight line from the veteran to any VA facility, and there we've actually even got reports that they're including regional offices that don't even have medical facilities. If you are within 40 miles of any VA facility, you are out of the program. You're not eligible to get care. That could, regardless of whether that facility has the need, what the kind of provider you need, like whether you need a psychiatrist or you need a specialist or anything else. If that facility exists, you're ineligible. And based on the spin that comes out of VAPR office, absolutely simultaneously makes me so angry I can't see straight, and then so nauseous that I'm sick to my stomach, is, well, you know, veterans aren't using the program, therefore we need to get it.
Yeah.
And we're going to take out roughly $10 million, and we're going to allocate it, and I'm quoting the secretary here, paraphrasing, we're going to allocate it to other VA priorities. Listen, Jack Wagon, Mr. McDonald, the priority is getting the veterans the care. There is no other priority. There's nothing else. There's no other priority out there. And there's nothing else to talk about. And Chairman Miller, who I absolutely, like, kneel at his feet, he screamed at the top of his lungs. He said, there is no other priority. You will not get this program as part of your new budget, and we're going to continue to work the program. You're going to fix the problems, but you're not going to get the program, because in the program it says, the law states that as soon as the money runs out for this temporary program, the program dies. So in essence, if they take the money out of the program, it's dead immediately. The VA actually looks at and tries and works really hard at finding new ways to screw people over. This is such a minor thing compared to some of the other things that we've seen. There is these informal claims that were found in Oakland. Boy, there's a major issue about those.
And we have Rusty on the phone again.
Oh, yay, Rusty.
Regarding that issue. There she is. So you're whiling away your day in Manteca, Miss Rusty?
Hello. Hey. Yeah, I'm up around Manteca looking for a trailer.
Oh, well, have fun. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the proper salutation is for that.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. That was my second choice.
Kazaw.
So what would you like to add to this?
Well, Rusty, you've kind of been in the heart of this.
Just a little short portion of it just a few minutes ago, and I couldn't re-listen in it while I was on hold. But, you know, you guys were talking about OIG, and I think that was probably the biggest problem that we saw as whistleblowers, trying to do the right thing and trying to bring stuff forward, that you turn this stuff over to OIG, who you think is you're doing the right thing, only to realize that you're not doing the right thing, that they're taking that information and distorting it however they want it. So I think that's probably my biggest surprise, is dealing with all with the VA and being a whistleblower and trying to see things get done right. It's just, you know, you're fighting an upstream battle, it seems like.
Rusty, since your interview on that CBS Nightly News story they did, have you seen any changes or any improvements in the situation there in Oakland?
Well, I'm not working anymore. I'm one of these individuals that got kind of pushed out, and I will say that from the individuals that I've talked to that are still working there, nothing's really changed. They've moved things around. It's putting out one fire to create another one.
Right.
And so they're not being above board. They're not being honest about what they really have on hand, about the claims that they have and how they're dealing with it. So I don't see any change right now, especially when you're dealing with the same management, the same managers that do everything they can to not let you do the right thing.
Didn't, as with most federal agencies, when they identify a problem in a particular department, their typical response is, let's throw some more money at it, and that'll help everything. I believe that happened in Oakland early on. They gave them more money to fix the problem. Did you see any changes as a result of a bigger budget?
Honestly, the only change I saw was them put down new carpet, new paint on the walls, new desk. It didn't have anything to do with procedures or the way we were doing our work. It didn't have anything to do with taking care of the veterans.
Isn't that great?
To do with spending the money so that the employees were more comfortable.
Yeah, they can walk around in their socks now and on a nice clean carpet. And yeah, that's wonderful. Nice way to spend our money.
But nobody can get in there to see, so.
That's right. That's all locked down tight. You can't get in there unless you know the secret handshake.
Well, that's actually an issue we have with under our overhaul process. When a veteran files a claim, the claim goes into this black hole, and you're never, you know, it's like a cardinal sin, and DHS will show up at your door and arrest everybody if you try to actually talk to the person who's handling your claim. Ironically enough, that an agency that handles 10 times the number of claims every month is Social Security. Yes, don't get me wrong, Social Security has its issues. However, the actual process and the way they handle claims, you actually are assigned a caseworker. You can talk to that person. Everything you send in or receive from them has a barcode on it. It is sent immediately into a cloud file for that case manager. And you can actually go, if you're close enough, you can go to that office and sit down and talk to that person and bring them records and explain discrepancies, et cetera, et cetera. In the VA, veterans have been vilified and we have been demonized. Now, when you go to a VA facility, there are armed police at the door. Veterans who, at any point, whether or not they have PTSD or anything else, they are treated. If you raise your voice, if you object to how they're handling something or how they're handling your care, you are now red flagged. And this is actually now a known thing that they red flag you, mm-hmm. and you have to check in with police and let them know you're on the facility. And the process, which they claim to be non-adversarial, is everything but that. It is adversarial from the very moment you arrive on a VA facility to the moment you leave. And if you're fortunate, you don't leave in handcuffs. And we've seen it across the country. Every single VA facility has been guilty of this behavior, as if their employees are sacrosanct from ever talking to a veteran.
Yeah, see, and that's the part we've got to get straightened out. They've obviously forgotten, you know, for all the talk about, when we come back from break, we're going to have one of you explain what eye care is. I always forget. I know the VA's motto thing is eye care, and the eye is for integrity, and I lose consciousness at that point. I forget what the care part is. You are listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. This one's for you, Rusty.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. Changes, turn and face the strain. Changes, you wanna be a richer man. Changes, turn and face the strain. Changes,
it's gonna coming for you, VA.
He didn't have that stutter before he started dealing with the VA. It ruined his singing career.
You're joining We the People Radio. Pop online with us, wethepeopleradio.us. And we're talking to Lauren Price from the Veteran Warriors today, getting a skinny on the VA. And actually the process behind the VA and what creates all this mess. Like, Lauren, I know that in Oakland, and I'm sure this isn't just happening there, a lot of the claims that would be backlog, would be part of the backlog, are being held in like the 400 series, which is correspondence.
Oh, yeah. That's
pretty common, I think.
We put out this report and we started a year ago because we knew that the VBA was blowing smoke up everybody's skirts. I said, wait a minute. Their numbers aren't jiving at all. They put out this Monday morning workload report, and we, you know, even if you just basically look at it, I stink at math. And I'm like, I can even tell that, you know, that these numbers aren't matching what they're saying.
It's common core math.
Well, it's worse than common core. I promise. It's common core on acid.
Oh, there you
Lauren,
go.
There's no wrong answers. Come on.
Yeah. Well, and that right there, that, you got it. God, you got it. It's common core, no wrong answer. Because according to the VA, they have all these categories that they dump claims into. They decided which category these claims go into. And they decide which ones they're going to talk about. They, and I'm quoting here, they and other stakeholders are going to decide who's going to talk about what they're doing and how successful they are at it. There are two major parts to this. One is accuracy. And in the testimony when I testified at Congress December 4th of 13, the OIG testified as to what they determine accuracy to be. The American Legion testified that their Tiger teams, what they use for accuracy when they spot check the VA. And then the VBA deputy undersecretary, he testified. And he said plainly that they have their own version of it, their own definition of accuracy. And of course they're going to come out at, you know, now they're meeting that 90 percentile. So we started doing this report, and we just take their report and we actually talk about everything on it. And not just the successes, because there are things like accrued claims. Accrued claims are where the veteran died waiting for their claim to be adjudicated.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they actually have a category for that. So they're aware. but they're not doing anything about it. Then they have appeals. Then they have the 400s. Those are, they call it, as you said, Aaron, correspondence. Well, that sounds like an obnoxious area to leave claims that you're just communicating back and forth with the veteran about. Except what we've discovered with Oakland and several other facilities now. And this is why we contend that Oakland is only one of 56 regional offices and all 56 should be audited by a third party, because the correspondence claims do not get calculated into the backlog. They do not get calculated into their work product. They do not get calculated into anything. And they have the ability to suppress mail on the entire queue, which is everything in there, which in most cases is tens of thousands of claims.
So you can write those veterans a letter, and so you get your points for the day, but then the letter never goes out, so it doesn't actually generate any work.
Exactly. And, oh, God forbid, if they actually generated that letter and it did go out the door, they would find out that the veteran had been dead for 4 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, because they actually didn't do anything on the claim ever. And in Oakland, we actually found that the veteran had been dead for 7 years when they claimed they generated a letter to the veteran. And his wife still lived in the same town, but had never received said letter. We know that they know how to manipulate the data and that their data integrity is useless. It's beyond useless. It's garbage. Secretary Shinseki actually came out and said, we quit doing the report for a while, because Secretary Shinseki, just before he resigned, came out and said during congressional testimony that the numbers that they're reporting are utter garbage. They're lies. He said it. He said these words. He said, we cannot validate any of the integrity of anything that we're reporting, and that it really doesn't mean anything to us. We're just doing this to shut you all up. And I almost fell off the chair. It's like, it's the only time the man ever told the truth. He said, you know, the VA doesn't care about that Monday morning workload report is due solely to appease Congress, because they know that the staffers who read them aren't paying attention, that only 4 out of 13 categories are being discussed, that the 400s don't even get registered on there. They don't even show up. So there are tens of thousands of veterans across the nation, who hundreds of thousands of them, whose claims are sitting there. When you hear veterans say, yeah, I filed a claim 4 years ago and I'm still waiting to hear, I can guarantee you, if I had access to their system, I would be able to sit there and just type in their Social Security number, and up would come their claim in the 400 series.
Mm. Yep. See, and that's pretty common. The problem is, and a lot of those claims from the Inspector General's report that fall into that category of 13,000, there are a bunch of those that are sitting in the 400s in Oakland, but as long as they never produce the list, none of those will ever be matched.
Oh, don't get me started on the list. Here's the thing about the list. The magical list that the OIG claims doesn't exist, because that's what leadership told them. If you start off with the premise that people are lying to you, which is what most internal affairs investigators do. They start with the premise that whoever they're going to talk to is lying. Then you can continue to search for the information. Well, the OIG assumes that everyone in the VA is a stellar employee who's going to tell the truth and abide by the I care core values.
Well, that way they won't be surprised with the answers they get.
Well, because there's no surprise.
Yeah.
If they just say, well, you know, do you have a list? And if they mean, do you personally sit here and have a list in front of you? Well, no, I don't. Okay, that's the end of the investigation right there. We happen to know for a fact that at least two, potentially even three, there's a third one that's rumored to have it, but we know for a fact that two employees have the list. One of which was asked by a congressional staffer to have the list forwarded to oversight and investigation. So don't give it to me. Don't give it to my congressman. Give it directly to ONI. Send it to them. Let them conduct their investigation.
And what happened?
Which that employee told that congressional staffer to pound sand and said, well, maybe you should just file a FOIA with Oakland.
Why am I not surprised?
The vein in my forehead stood out for about 3 days, and I live in Florida, and it took everything I had not to have a road trip, because that employee just gave the finger to a congressional staffer. I'm not going to turn it over. I don't care who you are, or what you do, or who you represent. I'm going to sit on this because my promotion to a manager and that extra big fat paycheck. And now she's eligible for bonuses under that structure where she's at now.
Oh, she just proved herself.
That means more to me than the 13,184 veterans.
Yeah, she proved herself to be a loyal employee stood on company line.
Part of the family.
Yep, she's in the circle of trust.
Well, I actually just emailed Aaron.
Exactly. Yeah.
The bonuses.
Oh, yes. But it was medical.
This came from GAO. The GAO issued this list. This is the list I emailed Aaron was the bonuses that were distributed VA-wide from 2007 until 2012. We're actually going to submit a new FOIA for 2013 and 14. The kicker of it is if you go in and just you do Control F because it's an Excel spreadsheet,
mm-hmm.
you can put in someone's name.
Oh,
their actual locations aren't listed. Their titles are, but their locations aren't, which is actually important to know that because VA plays, shuffleboard with their employees so well that they could be in a different location. And I use as an example our esteemed leadership of the James A. Haley VA hospital, which is one of the top three VA hospitals in the country. It handles polytraumas. The guys getting out of Walter Reed that have lost limbs overseas, they go to James A. Haley for their follow-on care. The leadership there, the director, her name was Catherine Fogarty, and she was there for several years. Catherine Fogarty comes from a background she's a dietitian, and she worked her way up through the food chain in the VA, and she's a good employee. A very good employee, and she's never dropped a dime on anybody. And she's never testified in Congress or anything else. So Ms. Fogarty's gotten bonuses every year. And the last one's, according to the report in 2012, the biggest bonuses. She's now been transferred. First she went in as an interim in Phoenix, and as of March 1st, she just got transferred to be the director of Kansas.
And you said she gets the biggest bonuses or has gotten the biggest bonuses?
As far as medical directors for facilities, she's up in the top tier now.
Mm. Well, yeah, here's one, $29,000. And this list you sent me has 1,864 people on it.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody in any industry that gets even an annual bonus of $29,000.
Well, if
in
you
private,
were
I guess if you were a big executive for,
I actually know one industry that is matching closely to behavior and optics, and that's the collection industry. In the collection industry, the way that the VA employees behave is nearly identical to how collection industry employees behave.
Yeah, but in the collection agency, you're bonused on how much money you bring in. So you're right. I guess if you model it after that, it's based on how much money you don't pay out.
Exactly.
That's
wonderful. It's just that obviously incentivized all the wrong stuff. We need to take a really quick break, and we're going to come back with Lauren. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We will be right back with you. I can't wait forever. Into We the People Radio.
And I'll tell you what, when it comes to the VA, yes, it is time for a giant change. Okay, Lauren, had a question in here for you. What about this? Have you heard of this survey that they're doing? It's called voiceoftheveteransurvey.com.
I was actually just scrolling through your stuff.
Yeah, did you see that?
I have to look it up. I will tell you this. There's been a couple of major surveys that the VA claims it did, one of which actually turned out to be only 200 participants.
Nice.
Yeah, and of course they said, you know, we want VA healthcare. Well, that's 200 people. Voice of the Veteran Survey is not a valid website.
Oh, nice.
There may be somebody running that.
I did get voiceoftheveteransurvey.com. It's United States Department of Veterans Affairs, J.D. Power and Associates.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then here you punch in your little access code. Looks like it comes on a postcard.
Oh, yeah. See, gotta tell you, got one of those before.
Yeah?
They send out the postcard, and they asked everybody to tell them basically how much they hate the VA or love the VA. I've yet to see, we've done several informal surveys and not one of them's ever come up with, we love the VA. Sadly, Concerned Veterans for America did a very large RAND survey. Who RAND, by the way, is far more unbiased than J.D. Power. J.D. Power gears the surveys that they run towards whoever's paying for the survey.
Good thinking.
That's a really
quick way to get asked back.
Yeah, and this is the second one that the VA's done. Concerned Veterans for America did theirs, and it was, you know, do you want VA health care? Do you want a choice in your health care versus, you know, VA versus non-VA? And overwhelmingly, they started their survey at the beginning of when the Choice Act cards were coming out, and overwhelmingly, veterans chose that they want a choice in their health care, and that they, if they can't access VA care within reasonable, and that's less than 30 days, reasonable amount of time, and with reasonable accommodation, they'd rather just go to civilian health care. And the VA refuses to acknowledge it. So now they're going to run their own. Tell us how great you think the VA is. I will tell you, I've tried several different, just now, tried several different search engines, and none of them can pull that survey up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ironically enough, what we hear from veterans on a daily basis, and our website and our Facebook page are wide open, and our Twitter feed are wide open to the public. Go on there and look. I challenged Undersecretary Hickey last week. I said, please, just take 5 minutes out of your day and just go read the commentary that comes through from our veterans.
Well, you know, the other place that I really picked up a lot of commentary was when Rusty was on CBS here a couple weeks ago, and if you looked at the archived, you know, footage of those interviews, and down below, all the different veterans weighing in, that happened to me, that must have been what happened to my claim. It's distressing. just absolutely distressing.
Oh, it's got to be hugely distressing for the employees that work there. I don't know how they can, you know, with a conscience, go to work every day.
Well, you have a lot of people who want to do the right thing, folks like
absolutely.
Rusty and Tony and a bunch of them who went to their managers and said, hey, wait a second, the way we're doing this is actually creating a problem. We're getting the wrong result. You know, we need to do something different. You know, these haven't been processed yet. These dates are wrong. Whatever it was, they went over time, over their time there at the VA and tried to fix it. And every single time it was like, get back in line, you know.
Well, we've seen it from internally, every single one, that every whistleblower that's come forward. If they tell the VA, their leadership within their organization as their site, if they tell them, hey, what we're doing actually violates the law, and it's not being a service to a veteran, and it doesn't embody the core values, we'd like to, and many of them actually just go in and say, look, can we try this instead? Can we do it this way instead? And I think I can be more productive. I think I can help more veterans. They don't go in there trying to be the poke in the eye. They try to go in there because they genuinely want to care for their veterans that they're trying to service. And each and every single one of them is, you know, they get the pat on the head, thanks for sharing, and then the duplicitous, you know, backdoor things start to happen to them.
Well, the double whammy is a lot of these folks are veterans. They know what these folks are going through, and now they have to relive it all with them.
Yeah.
It's criminal.
We actually have one of the whistleblowers we have is a guy who he was working in a non-claim-related sector of the VA in Baltimore, and extremely overqualified for a claims examiner position. But as I said earlier, claims examiners, the first line people that are actually handling a veteran's claim, have the exact same job description as a receptionist. So here's this guy, and he's already an employee. He's been an employee for 4 years, and he applies for a job as a claims examiner, which would actually be less money, but it's something he really wants to do. And his application's taken, and he's told, yeah, we'll consider you. And then he finds out that the interviews have happened, and then he finds out that they've selected someone who is not a veteran. And he's a disabled veteran who has 60% rating, therefore should have the automatic 30% preference. So even if he and this guy were exact equals, he would still have gotten the job over the other guy. And he started asking around, and the union rep is the one that told him, well, you know, no veteran's ever going to work on claims. They will not put veterans on a veteran's claims job. He said, well, why? Because we don't want veterans to work on veterans' claims because you'll give them the benefit of the doubt. You'll take care of your buddy.
Oh, that's so wrong.
Wow.
They don't want to give them a benefit of the doubt.
It's so wrong on so many levels.
Yeah, no fooling. That's horrible.
But the reality of it is once he raised that stink and he filed a formal complaint and everything else, the next thing you know, he literally, and I'm not exaggerating, ended up working in the mailroom.
Nice.
And he's now a supervisor in the mailroom. And he'll never see working on claims. And it's when we talk about the culture in the VA, there's two parts to the culture. One is their internal culture of veterans are the enemy, and we're to be feared. We're dangerous, and we are the one that we have to protect against. And the other half of that is when they actually come in contact with us, whether it's at a regional office or at a medical center, we're leeches. And these are words that I'm actually paraphrasing out of statements that have been made by VA employees. We're leeches, we're mooches, we're liars, we're scammers. And there was actually a whole meeting, a bunch of PTSD clinical people, social workers and things like this, and they were complaining about how many veterans they had to see, And there's like, they only come in here because they want their crazy checks. Like,
oh.
I would happily hand over. Happily hand it over.
I just don't see how people like that can stay employed in a service industry where, I mean, that's their job is to help these people, and yet they treat them like dirt.
Well, the trick is to make sure that the people at the top and management keep the rest of these guys either silent or in line.
Right. And that's what they do. They pat them on the back.
When Douglas Bragg was the director down there in Oakland, they used to have meetings about someone is hurting the family. I mean, they were like cult meetings. Someone's hurting the family. And then you run around, you know, we've got rats. We've got to find out who the rats are. They're hurting the family. Oh, my God.
Ultimately, he ended up being the first one to go.
I did a paper for college on Jim Jones. And that sounds exactly the kind of thing he used to say.
Exactly.
And I guess I actually had, we went to the CBA unveiling of their plan for the VHA. We participated in discussion with them over the last 6 or 8 months, since last May, about that plan. And I have to say, it's not completely everything we propose, and there are some parts of it that I'm not necessarily in agreement with, but the big picture is they at least have a plan. The VA doesn't. The biggest thing, when I was talking to some of the people there, we all came to the same conclusion. No matter what we say, we being the advocates, the veterans, the people being serviced, no matter what this new committee that's just been set, there are now three committees ordered by law that are supposed to tell the president what's wrong with the VA. Three. What's going to happen is this. There's 22 months left in his administration, and the end result will be they're waiting for these reports. And what they're going to find is the VA is dysfunctional, the VA is broken beyond repair, and needs a complete and full overhaul. And he's going to drop it in the lap of the next administration.
Yep.
And in the meantime, what happened in Oakland, it happened in New Orleans, it happened in St. Petersburg, Florida, the same thing that happened in Oakland, claims just magically disappear. Consults for medical care disappear to the tunes of tens of thousands in Los Angeles, in New Orleans, in every conceivable location. What's going to happen is nothing's going to change. All of us veterans out here who are striving to get some semblance of normalcy when we deal with the VA, we expect them to be non-adversarial. It's everything but that. And we expect them to care. According to their core values, they don't care. They care about their paycheck. The leadership, even of the local facilities, are more concerned with their performance bonuses than they are with producing viable work products, which is caring for veterans.
See, and that's the real kicker, is that the whole focus of this thing has been lost, and our veterans, God love them. You know, I can't tell you how many people I meet, and this subject comes up, and they're like, oh, but there are so many people worse off than I am. And it's like, okay, guys and gals, you got to stop being so selfless. I think it's time to rise up just a wee bit. We're going to talk more about that before we get to the top of the hour, but we need to fit in one more quick break. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. don't they need a change? You know, we talk a lot about the VA here, and we talk a lot about the Benefits Administration because that's the one that people hear about when they hear about backlog, but they don't really know what it means. And it's one that the news media doesn't cover much because it's kind of complicated and it's sort of boring. But boy, oh boy, does it affect a lot of people. Just there are so many people. And if you live out here on the West Coast, you have to remember 25% of the nation's homeless veterans live in California. So if you have homeless veterans living in California, odds are a huge percentage of them, if they have filed benefits claims, they're at the Oakland office. And if they're homeless because they can't get their benefits, can't get the medical care, they're unable to get a job because they need the services, you know, all these things, and then their claim takes 5, 6, 7 years. There was a guy here in the Reading area living on, I don't know, $150 a month, and he'd been waiting for his claim for like 6 years. He was a Special Forces paratrooper, messed up his hips and his knees, jumping out of planes with a big heavy backpack, and the VA just continued to dog him. You know, file that if it's, you know, file expedited claim. Expedited means nothing. It's ridiculous. If people really knew the stories, I think they'd go berserk, frankly.
Well, that's actually been our contention all along, Aaron. This is not, and I have to talk to, when we go to Congress, we talk to everybody. Doesn't matter which side of the aisle they're on. We are not registered voters for anything solely because we don't have political beliefs. We have American beliefs. And what the American taxpayers are not paying attention to because they're being fed information about, you know, stuff going on in the Middle East and in Israel and every conceivable other location than here. And right now, 7% of the voting population are veterans. And the American public is paying for the VA to do the things they do, like the $40 billion worth of cosmetics. Basically, you know, $40 million worth of Mary Kay for the VA. The idea that the secretary has to even discuss homelessness. We shouldn't have to discuss this, but people have failed to see the big picture, and we just spent 2 weeks stomping every hall of Congress to say Phoenix was bad, that the whole scandal was bad. The idea that something we all know, every veteran out there knows that we've been subjected to this shell game with our appointments and all this, we all know it. We've all had to live it. But let's look at the big picture. If you don't get rated by the VA for some type of service connection for your injuries or illnesses, you don't get any benefits from the VA. You get nothing. So you are trapped in dealing with social services at the state level or the local municipal level, or you're literally on the good graces of some nonprofit who hopefully will keep you off the street. And in our mind, the bigger of the two animals that needs to be resolved is the VBA, because until we get their benefits and their service-connected ratings for legitimate injuries and illnesses, we can't get them benefits. We can't get them medical care. We can't get them housing, we can't get them job assistance, we can't get them anything. And which is why I actually reached out directly to Undersecretary Hickey, and I said, please sit down with me, give me, I'm sending you an outline, this outline is useless without discussion, I need to talk to you, I need to explain to you how easy this is, no one will lose their job, no one. Yeah, I'm going to test everybody. I'm going to make sure everybody does a performance evaluation and make sure they know how to do their job. And those that don't will go into other sectors of the VA. But we need to get this right, because there are millions of veterans out there that don't have any benefits, and those are the ones that end up homeless. And the ones that, you know, the VA says, well, yeah, we'll give you 10% for tinnitus, never mind the fact that you lost a leg. We you know, we're going to deny that. We're going to deny the fact that half of your head got blown off. We're going to deny all those things, but we'll give you 10% for tinnitus. That's the kind of thing that's happening now, them trying to get rid of the claims inventory instead of looking at what's called results-based determinations. They do it differently. The VBA actually has, they use results-based determination to decide claims. If a veteran claims three issues and the total accumulation under VBA rules should be 100%.
Lauren, we've got about 25 seconds.
Okay. So, if anybody wants to know about VBA, ask me.
Hey, and if people, especially people who would like to speak out about the agency, whether you want to go public or not, go on the website, wethepeopleradio.us, link to Veteran Warriors, and tell them your story and become part of the solution. That's what we're looking for. So veterans out there, if you want it fixed, look for folks within the VA that are unhappy with the system and want to make it better, and send them Lauren's way. Thank you so much, Lauren, for spending the afternoon with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Erin.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. See you guys later next week, I'm sure.
All right, thanks, Erin and Bill. This has been We the People on KCNR Shasta Redding.